Hi, I'm Steve Clemens, and I have a question. Trump fought the law, but will the law win? Let's get to the bottom line. It's just simply never happened before. A former U.S. president is being referred by Congress for crimes to defraud the United States while he's running for the job again. But that's exactly what happened when the Congressional Committee investigating the chaos of the last few days of the Trump presidency wrapped up its work. The recommendation is mostly symbolic because the Justice Department decides for itself whether or not it'll pursue Trump in the courts. At the heart of the issue is the attack on Congress on January 6, 2021, and how much Trump tried to obstruct the certification of the election. Trump and his supporters are defiant, and they argue that these are political witch hunts that will only make him more popular in America. Well, are they right? Today, we're talking with Shelby Talcott, former senior White House correspondent for The Daily Caller, and currently covers Trump and Republicans for Semaphore, where, in full disclosure, I'm also an editor. And Hugo Lowell, who covers Trump and the Department of Justice as the political investigations reporter for The Guardian. Hugo, let me just start with you and ask you. We've had now many sessions of the January 6th committee playing before millions and millions of Americans, huge ratings. Lots of people are aware of that committee, and it had its final session, and it made four major criminal referrals to the Department of Justice referring to President Trump. Can you outline for our audience what they've now referred to the Department of Justice?
Yeah, look, there's four principal charges here, and it ranges from obstruction of an official proceeding and conspiracy to defraud the United States to kind of more broad statutes like incitement of an insurrection and making false statements to the federal government. And so if you look at these four charges that are being recommended to the Justice Department, they really follow what the Select Committee thought they could possibly get the Justice Department to actually charge. The obstruction of an official proceeding, very straightforward on its terms. You know, you have to act with corrupt intent to try and obstruct an official proceeding, in this case, the certification on January 6th. And I think the Select Committee and at least legal experts that we've spoken to think the elements of the offense there are very straightforwardly met. For other things like incitement of insurrection, that's possibly a little bit trickier for the Justice Department because, you know, it's you have to basically show that Trump knew ahead of time when he was basically making statements like, you know, we're going to march to the Capitol or, you know, be there, we'll be wild, his infamous tweet on December 19, that was going to lead to imminent lawless action. That's the legal standard. And so I think the Select Committee went for a number of statutes.
Look, I want to hear the whole thing, but I just want to ask you really quickly about President Trump. Don't we know from some of the testimony that he knew that the protesters were coming, that he said, hey, come to Washington? He knew that there was a potential to be violent. He actually knew that they were armed. And we know that he actually wanted to jump out of his Secret Service car and get up in those steps and go right in with them. I mean, is any of that in dispute?
The facts aren't in dispute, but I think what's tricky is for the Justice Department to show this beyond a reasonable doubt. Mm. I mean, you can say that, you know, Trump sent this tweet. Trump had, you know, fiery rhetoric at the Ellipse rally that preceded the Capitol attack. But to basically say that he was part of a conspiracy where he knew what he was doing was illegal, what he knew was going to lead to imminent lawless action, you know, that's a higher standard. And that's what the Justice Department basically has to figure out is, you know, are we going to go for the biggest charge that might have the biggest penalty, or are we going to go for something that's safer and we can basically sustain a conviction?
So I'm sorry to interrupt you. So there are other planks of this when I wanted to jump in on that one. But what are the other planks?
Well, look, there are various elements in each of the statutes that the Justice Department has to figure out. And a lot of them overlap, which makes it really complicated. And at the heart of this are two kind of overlapping conspiracies identified by the Select Committee. One was a political plan on January 6th to try and get his Vice President Mike Pence to stop the certification. And we got hints, we didn't get full evidence, but we got hints of a second potential conspiracy around the coup attempt around, you know, the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers, these far-right extremist groups who actually stormed the Capitol. And the Select Committee believes that Trump was the ringleader of that second conspiracy. They just don't have enough evidence to make a full referral. And so that's why they're saying to the Justice Department, look, you guys have an arsenal of powers that we don't have. You know, you can do search warrants, you can seize cell phones in the way that we cannot. But we think, based on the evidence, that is where our investigation would have led. And so, Justice Department, please investigate.
Shelby, in response to these referrals, President Trump on True Social, you know, put out his own statement. And he says, these folks don't get it. that when they come after me, people who love freedom rally around me. It strengthens me. What doesn't kill me makes me stronger. I'm just interested, Shelby, you hang out with these folks, you know them well. How are they seeing these criminal referrals? Is it something to rally around and it validates their view that Donald Trump is being victimized by the state? I mean, how are they sensing and feeling this moment?
Yes, certainly, I would say overall, from people I've spoken to in the hours after yesterday's January 6th committee finding, is that nothing's changed for the majority of Republicans. They've always kind of viewed this January 6th committee as a sham. I think that's a direct quote that Trump has used repeatedly. They've always viewed it as political. They rallied around him after the Mar-a-Lago raid. So I think it'll be interesting to see. We've seen a more muted response this time around, but that's partially because, as Hugo noted, the committee's, it's largely symbolic. And so nothing really has actually happened if the DOJ were to actually bring criminal charges against Trump following the January 6th committee. I think we'll see another rally around Trump's situation, and I think we could see him bolstered, certainly. So I think his comments yesterday on Truth Social are accurate, and they're based on, you know, a long history of Trump does something, the DOJ or another political entity responds, and then Republicans rally around him because they view it as political and biased and, you know, fraudulent. And so certainly that's the reaction to the committee's findings that we're widespread hearing about still.
And do they see the Department of Justice as a political entity, not an unbiased player in this story?
No. So even I spoke to one former 2020 campaign official who, you know, isn't on the Trump the Trump train this time around. And he essentially said, you know, the DOJ is still political. So even people who aren't necessarily for Trump this time around view the Department of Justice and view these political entities as political. So it's not necessarily about whether someone's pro-Trump or anti-Trump. It's just a large number of Republicans view this group as politically motivated.
Hugo, I'd just love to get your sense of someone who follows this, and I know you know the legal detail. What do you feel is driving his resilience after so many, you know, legal assaults, if you will, on his behavior and performance and what he's done?
I think Trump has kind of fundamental characteristics that make him difficult to prosecute and to kind of stick charges on him, not least because he doesn't like keeping a written record. He doesn't send emails. You know, he places calls from other people's phones. You know, one thing that the January 6th
committee...
Sounds
like a mafia boss.
Well, in so many words. But, you know, the January 6th committee found that on the day of the Capitol attack, Trump was calling aides and senators using other people's phones. And so it was very difficult for them to kind of track what Trump was doing and who he was talking to at any one time. And the Justice Department has that same problem. And I think this is reflected in all of the legal issues that surround him, you know, whether it's with the Mar-a-Lago documents case. You know, he's like, you know, I didn't pack these classified documents myself. It was other people who packed them, and it was all a big misunderstanding, and it was an error. With January 6th, it's like, look, I just sat back and did nothing. Or with the fake elector scheme, you know, this plot to replace pro-Biden slates of electors where Biden won in the 2020 election with Trump slates, he says, well, look, this was just contingency planning. And because there's no over orders saying, you know, we need to knock over the Capitol because I want to become president again, I think, you know, prosecutors find it very difficult to create an evidentiary paper trail that could lead to prosecution.
Hugo, is there anything that could happen at this moment to prevent Donald Trump from running for president again?
I don't think so. So, you know, yesterday when we were talking about the January 6th committee and the referrals, there was a lot of focus on the incitement of insurrection because there is a part of that statute that says, you know, if you're convicted, you're ineligible to run for government office. How that squares with the Constitution, which basically, you know, outlines very specific instances in which someone cannot run for the highest office in this nation is unclear. And even if he was convicted on that, you know, on the incitement of insurrection charge, it seems really unlikely that the federal government would be able to effectively stop Trump from running for president again. I mean, at the end of the day, I think, you know, there is a wider question that needs to be answered, which is, do you want, if Trump becomes a convicted felon, do you want him running for president? And will you vote for him again?
And Shelby, what's the answer to that? Could Donald Trump, knowing what you know, be president of the United States again?
Absolutely. Again, I don't see the committee's findings, nor do I see a possible DOJ criminal charges preventing voters from voting for him. I think people's minds are largely made up about Donald Trump, and if they like him, they like him. I mean, this committee has been going on for 18 months, and few people's minds have changed. And I think the other thing that's important to note is that for a lot of outside D.C. people, the January 6th stuff is very low on their list of priorities. It's viewed as a D.C. issue. And so those voters, and there are a swath of voters across the Midwest and across the country who, you know, they didn't experience January 6th. They don't quite understand why there was an 18-month investigation. And regardless of where you fall on the importance of investigating January 6th, I think it's notable because these are, you know, the real Americans that get out and vote and decide a presidential election. And for them, things like the economy and gas prices matter far more than, you know, who incited January 6th, which happened thousands of miles away from them in a city that they've never been to.
Let me ask you another question, Shelby. I always saw early on in Donald Trump's story that he was more of a foreign policy realist than a lot of others. But I was surprised that he chose Vladimir Putin as someone to celebrate, to try and become close to, you know, to talk so positively for. And so for myself as a national security realist, that was a line that was very surprising for me. Are there lines that are hard for Trump supporters to see crossed over? Might his taxes, which now the House of Representatives has just received, might there be issues in there that would say, well, that has now gone a little bit too far and his support may erode? Or is his support rock solid?
So I think the big thing is certainly for the more middle-of-the-road Republicans, there are things like that that can sway them, and we've already seen it, right? We saw Trump's disastrous dinner with a white nationalist and Kanye West. We saw him not apologize after that dinner. We saw his major announcement was NFTs, which baffled many Republicans'
minds. Can you explain an NFT to our audience?
I am not the person to explain an NFT, but it is essentially
digital artifacts that are unique, and he has put out numbered digital cards.
And you can purchase
them. I think about $95 a card or something. So you can get the whole set of 45 cards
and
for about $4,950.
He sold out in a day.
With lasers shooting out of his eyes.
Yep. And he's
and
a
sort
cowboy
of the polite society in Washington was saying, you know, was just, you know, going crazy.
And so I think the other thing to remember is he does retain a large amount of those core Trump supporters who are very much pro-Trump, regardless of what he does. And so for that group of voters, I'm not convinced that things like taxes or whether or not he incited the January 6th riot, I'm not convinced that that changes their minds. Because, again, it goes back to the fact that a lot of conservatives have painted the picture of, okay, if Trump gets prosecuted for X, Y, and Z, it's because it's political. And that's what they read and that's what they hear day in and day out. And so that's going to be their go-to. Oh, it's political. His taxes, it's political. And so that's not going to sway them off of voting.
Right. Hugo, I talked to someone very senior in what I call Trump land, and I asked about this, and they said, Steve, this is going to take so long to work through. The Mar-a-Lago classified papers issue is going to take so long. But he said that the one issue that may be coming up rather soon that might have teeth with regards to President Trump is the Georgia grand jury investigation into President Trump's alleged efforts to try and overturn the election there. Have you done any work on that? Have you looked at the potential ramifications of Georgia findings in this and the grand jury, which is really disconnected from all these other issues and has a different pace?
Yeah, I mean, it's disconnected in some ways, and it's actually overlapping in other cases. You know, as you say, you know, the Georgia District Attorney, Fannie Willis, you know, she has been promising for months that, you know, she expects an indictment probably from this special grand jury that's been convened in Georgia looking at Trump's efforts to overturn the election. And some of the evidence there is actually quite compelling. I mean, if you think about, like, Trump's phone call to Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger saying, you know, I only need 11,000 more votes to win this election. Like, it's not a big deal. Give me 11,000 votes. And I think things like that, which are very visceral in the mind, you know, would sway a special grand jury in that sense. And so I think an indictment is very possible in Georgia. But there, I think there are wider issues about having, you know, a state unelected partisan DA going after former presidents. And I really kind of wonder how the Justice Department looks at that, you know, thinking, you know, this really is a federal issue. We don't want, you know, the Georgia DA interrupting our criminal case examining January 6th. And so I think there's these two worlds are going to collide sooner or later. And I think it'd be interesting to see how the Justice Department responds.
Let me put up this one chart. It's very interesting. And from a USA Today poll, in that the majority of Republicans now prefer Ron DeSantis, governor of Florida, over Trump in a matchup, and it's about 56% to 33%, which I was surprised by. But one of the things I've been struggling with in the many years of trying to understand the meaning and purpose of Donald Trump in the world is whether he's a manifestation of political feelings and attitudes in the country or a creator of them who brought this along and created his own franchise. Ron DeSantis, if I were asked, would be someone who I think would be a very successful Trump-like populist. Are they essentially the same brand, Shelby?
Yeah, I think DeSantis has been described by many as kind of Trump 2.0. He has all of the same policies and ideas as Trump, but he does it in a more presidential way. He doesn't have the drama that Trump has. And as much as Trump has his core base of supporters who are unlikely to sway away from him, we also have seen him struggling, like that poll shows. And that's important because that poll indicates that there are a number of middle-of-the-road Republicans or independents who might have supported Trump in the past and now are just tired of the drama. They're tired of, like Hugo said, the multiple investigations that we're seeing into him. They're tired of the missteps. He launched his campaign with the dinner, and then a few weeks, you know, he hasn't done any rallies. People are confused about what his campaign even looks like, if there even is an official one. And so I would say, as much as DeSantis is Trump-like, he does it in a way that is appealing to a lot of Republican voters.
It's an interesting challenge right now to think about what Jack Smith is going to do, the special counsel, what the Department of Justice is going to do, and whether it's going to try and say it doesn't matter who he is, but their very actions could, in fact, fuel his campaign again.
Yeah, and look, the Justice Manual says, you know, this is the handbook that the Justice Department operates from. It's like you're not supposed to consider the fame or, you know, the brand of the person you're investigating. You're supposed to just follow the facts of the law. But then prosecutors are not robots either, right? They know they're investigating Trump. They know there will be potential political implications. And, you know, in many ways, it's almost like a repeat of 2016 when you had at the FBI, you had, you know, James Comey, you know, whether he was going to open and reopen investigations into Hillary Clinton's emails, and this very conscious attempt by Comey to not want to crash the election. But then, you know, I was just thinking what you were saying earlier about the timeline. If the Justice Department indicts Trump either on the January 6th case or the Mar-a-Lago case in the spring, we probably won't get a trial until the summer. And then if he's convicted and you go through an appeals process, you're probably going to be at the end of 2023. And then if the appellate court upholds a conviction and Trump appeals to SCOTUS, then you're running straight into the 2024 election. And I think there is a concern, and yeah, I think this was partly why Merrick Garland, the attorney general, appointed a special counsel, because he didn't want to have these charging decisions seem to be political. But nonetheless, you're running into the 2024 election, and I think you're right in that if he is indicted or if there are still multiple investigations swirling around him, it bolsters his brand with his base, because the MAGA crowd, you know, the really hardcore Trump supporters are going to see this as really political. You know, as Shelby said, you know, this is the baseline. And if that is what is pushing Trump into the presidential election, then I only see Trump's brand growing.
Well, this raises an interesting final point I'm interested in, which is the Ron DeSantis question. Does Ron DeSantis begin thinking that the legal fragility that Donald Trump may be in is an opportunity to push over? And does that make him sort of an ally of what of these legal proceedings against Trump? Or does he defend Trump against the state in an effort to try and win? What pathway does Ron DeSantis have to come out ahead of this and become a beneficiary of the Trump storm?
It's a good question, because we saw after the Mar-a-Lago raid, almost all of the potential 2024 presidential candidates, I think DeSantis included, came out in support of Trump in that moment. And so it's going to be kind of, for Republicans, the question of, do I come out in support against my potential opponent because I know this is what the conservative base believes? They believe that this is politically motivated, that they believe that this should be illegal. Or do I stay quiet and kind of risk probably angering a portion of the base?
Do they believe in democracy? Do they believe that it's the liberals that are undermining democracy? We talk about democracy a lot in this country politically, but who are they pro-democracy in their world, of the conservatives?
Certainly. I don't think the Republican base believes that their viewpoints are anti-democracy. And I think that's an important point that really gets lost a lot in these conversations, because each side kind of takes their own viewpoints and then goes after the other side and accuses them of being anti-democracy or what have you. But I do think both sides, you know, A, probably have accurate concerns and points, and B, definitely they think, each side thinks that they're pro-democracy and their way of doing things is pro-democracy.
Hugo, as sort of an outside observer of it, what are your views on how each side sees democracy?
I think, you know, clearly it's kind of energizing on both sides, right? I mean, if you look at the midterms, going into the election, even, you know, Democrats themselves are saying, you know, democracy and the kind of the strength of democracy is not a core issue. And as it turned out, probably for a lot of Democrats it was. And I think that surprised a lot of people. And then on the flip side, you also have Republicans who talk about, you know, in the wake of the 2020 election security, and, you know, we don't like mail-in ballots, and we don't like drop boxes. And so I think it's really energizing on both sides. I think what's interesting is what energizes one side more. And in the midterms, it seemed to be Democrats. And I wonder if, you know, the more that Trump talks about how the 2020 election was stolen from him, that actually puts off Republican voters.
Yeah, I actually definitely agree with that. And I was on a call yesterday with a conservative think tank that had done polling in the wake of the midterms to figure out what went wrong. And one of the things the pollster noted was Democrats really pushed the threat to democracy idea. Republicans didn't take it seriously, and that was a mistake. Mm. Republicans should have taken that more seriously because it energized their base so much.
Fascinating conversation. I want to thank both of you. Politics reporter Shelby Talcott of Semaphore and Hugo Lowell of The Guardian, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So what's the bottom line? If Trump had a Facebook page, his relationship with the law would say, it's complicated. An investigation in Georgia about pressuring election officials, an investigation in Florida about handling sensitive national security documents, an investigation in New York about tax evasion. The man has legal issues. But will any of this matter? His fans still love him and think it's all politically motivated, and he may never face any consequences in a court of law. But the American people seem to be the ones who are standing up for the integrity of their system. The majority voted him out of office in 2020 and didn't vote for his friends in 2022. He may cry that it's persecution, but sorry, Mr. Trump, it sounds to me like prosecution, and it has to happen for the sake of America's future. Or else others will come along, learn by imitating, and do the exact same thing in the future. And that's the bottom line.